AI by itself is not anything new, but it is receiving a lot of press. And we're being asked, how do you as a company and as technology professionals, how do you expect to use AI?
To kick things off, first of all, my name is Peter Rodenhauser. I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Course Technologies. I started my 20-plus year career as a practitioner of technology solutions, both designing and developing integration solutions, and ultimately served in a number of leadership roles and positions across several on-prem and cloud-based software enterprises, and of course here at Corsica. With me today is Brian Harmison, the CEO of Corsica Technologies. Brian spent over two decades of his career in the technology space, spending the first part of his career as a software developer, so as a practitioner as well, and ultimately building and leading IT businesses focused on helping clients achieve success through technology innovation. Brian, welcome.
Thanks, Peter. Excited to be here.
All right.
You made me sound kind of old.
Well, yeah. Hopefully not as old as me. But yeah. Today, 42% of IT professionals at larger enterprises or organizations report they're actively developing or deploying AI-based technologies, while only 30% of mid-sized organizations report piloting AI solutions. And, when I think about this, I think it's a very natural time delay of mid-market organizations evaluating and piloting technology. We've seen this historically, whether it be through the adoption of ERPs or cloud-based technologies and applications. Not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, maybe it's a good thing, allowing the enterprises to be that bleeding edge so that the mid-market can certainly learn from some of those lessons and not repeat some of those failures. Brian, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think, Peter, you're exactly right. This is the normal progression that we typically see, which is, most of us in kind of this mid-market space are watching to see the ways that these larger organizations adopt AI. I think, unlike a lot of initiatives in the past, we're getting pushed harder and faster on this, and we have less time to react and get a plan together than maybe some past technology waves like SaaS applications and those types of things.
Yeah, totally agree. And it is it's a hot topic for us right now. I can't think of a single client meeting that I'm not in where, I'm not getting asked about it. But certainly I think that this data supports what I'm hearing from the other side of the table, which is we're kind of waiting to see what everyone else does first and really learn from that. And hopefully guide some of the audience here today on how they can start to dip their toe in the water and what some of the risks that they might want to keep an eye out for as they do that. Let's go over the agenda here for today. So I'll turn things over to Brian.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. As Peter mentioned, everyone is excited about AI, and we're gonna talk here in just a minute about what is AI, I think most of us as IT professionals realize that AI by itself is not anything new, but it is receiving a lot of press, and it puts us in a really unique position where we're being asked by executives, by leadership teams, by board of directors, how do you as a company and as technology professionals, how do you expect to use AI? And so we have a window of opportunity where we might get to spend some money that we wouldn't normally spend on some technology initiatives that could be really meaningful for the organization. And that's part of what we want to talk about here today. So as we jump into, what is AI? And I think it's important to recognize again that AI isn't new. Most of the AI that we hear about in the news today is generative AI. And that is so interesting because it is conversational and it feels smarter because it's responding to us in a way that seems very human. But natural language processing, machine learning, those things are not necessarily new in the scope of what we're doing. You know, I like to use the example of anyone that's used Netflix has encountered AI for years. The recommendations that pop up for you of you, because you watch this, you might like these things. All of those are utilizing information to predict what you might like as an individual. And so when we think about artificial intelligence, it is that gathering and an analyzing of information in a way that is much faster and much more complete than a person can do in that period of time. So specifically generative AI, we want to spend some time on that today because it is the AI that most of our executives, most of the decision makers that we're encountering in technology right now are talking about. And so this includes AI that can generate text, of course. That's what we're used to seeing out of ChatGPT. But it expands into things like images and video. It utilizes natural language to really interpret the inputs and generate outputs. And there are some limitations to this. I think for those of you who are using ChatGPT or Copilot, I'm sure you've run into cases where the data that comes back is inaccurate. Certainly ChatGPT has limitations on the time frame in which it gathers its information from. And then it's interesting that you may get inconsistent results. So you can ask AI the same question twice and possibly get a couple of different answers. So, focusing on generative AI is really the piece that we're going to talk about today. And as we think about that, we have some example use cases for where generative AI can be used and where we see it being used across our client base. So the first is in generating business documents. Now, I don't think there's any lawyers on this call or on this webinar, but we would certainly say, don't ever take legal advice from AI. That said, a lot of people are taking legal advice from AI. So I know a number of individuals that use this for drafting and editing, business agreements and contractual language. And it's not a bad way to create some content quickly. But I think we recognize that it's really important that we take our own ownership of that. But this can be really valuable in creating things like templates, answering some business questions that you might have. It's really interesting if you're not using ChatGPT a lot now to ask it some kind of marketing-based market questions about the industry that you operate in. For example, what are some common marketing campaigns that a business like mine, describe your own business, typically use. And that can really give you some ideas of what might be happening in the marketplace. You can ask it questions about things that are compliance or legal, legal agreement based. Doesn't take the place of a legal team, but it can give you something to start with and share. And then certainly ways that you communicate with customers. So, if you produce agreements, running those through generative AI can give you some ideas on ways to phrase things that maybe you haven't thought of or that could be a bit more engaging for them. One of the real practical ways that we utilize AI is using Copilot to analyze the transcription of meetings. So I think in a post 2020 world, we are probably all in a lot more Teams meetings than we would like to be, but also we need to take notes. We need to know what's going on, but be able to stay engaged with the folks that we're talking to. And so using Copilot to take those meeting transcriptions and turn it into action items can be really valuable and can provide a pretty concise summary of what those what was discussed in the meeting and action items. And for those of you who aren't good at taking notes, this can be a great substitute for that. We can also use it to help us build some analytics. So thinking about the challenge of data, and this is something that we hear frequently as we talk to our clients. There's a lot of different systems that we utilize in the technology space. And as a result, we have data living in a couple of different places. And so Microsoft has done a great job of making what used to be the Power Automate system into Copilot Studio and starting to give us the opportunity to use AI to generate scripts and workflows that can pull that data into a useful location and produce some of the reporting that we've had to do by hand. It can give us the opportunity to do this application-to-application integration much, much more rapidly. And that library of systems and APIs is growing by the day. And then certainly we can use it to build some reporting. Where we see AI being used a lot, and this is an area that we probably all encounter more than we realize, is around customer experience. So most chat-based support starts with some level of AI interaction at the beginning. So when we engage with those support systems, they typically gather some information and then can do a live handoff to an actual person or can work us through a service related flow. So I think there's a lot of good case studies around businesses that have replaced a lot of their customer service department with some automation using generative AI. All right. Jumping into just some risk and legal considerations. This is the part of AI that I think is worth spending some time on. And as IT professionals, we need to be educated on. Part of our job is protecting the cyber landscape of our business, as well as the possibility for data exfiltration through whatever means that might be. And with generative AI, my guess would be if you took this poll that we did and asked your user base that you're responsible for as a technologist, that the results would be somewhat different. I'd be surprised if you have a marketing team if they're not using generative AI to assist them in developing content or content ideas. And so we pretty rapidly start to head into a space where, where is our information going? Can we be confident that the things that our users might be doing with AI are protecting our business? It's good to recognize right now that there is no federal framework legislation that is governing a lot of the AI concerns. We do see Europe leading the way in this area, much like GDPR and other privacy-based frameworks. But currently, there is not a lot of meaningful legislation here. And so this is an area that we need to keep an eye on. It is possible that as bills get introduced and ultimately signed into law, that we may have some backward-looking work that we may have to do around the way we've used AI in our organizations. And then there are some states that are currently rolling out these laws. I expect we're going to continue to see states adopt AI frameworks faster than the government does right now. So, what are those legal risks that exist today, even without overarching federal legislation? There are a lot of legal risks to think about. From a contractual perspective, I mentioned a lot of folks that are asking AI legal questions, that are using it for contracts. There's concerns about, how well that content can really stand up under you know, under legal review, and not enough time has passed to really know that. We also don't know where that content is coming from. And so there's an opportunity that you may be using someone else's content without knowing that. And that really ties into this concept of IP ownership. Anytime we have intellectual property that we're developing as a business, we need to make sure that content is developed organically within our organization and is not coming out of AI, where we could end up with some kind of plagiarism or copyright concerns. We've got to guard ourselves from an employment and customer facing perspective as well against some of the biases. So, you know, you can ask AI questions about hiring and end up with a very biased or incorrect result. And then, I think of Peter mentioned my background in software development, how different the world is for a software developer today. We certainly all as developers have Googled how to do something, but we had to take that example that really didn't apply to our use case, but may have bits and pieces, and turn it into something that we can use. Now you can ask AI to write me code that does this. And what we can end up with is a team that maybe doesn't understand why what they're doing works or how it works. And, you know, that can retard our skill development on our teams and create a situation where we're over-reliant on the output of the generative AI in this case. And then it's also, you know, many of our clients and ourselves as well are involved in some kind of strategic transactions. And so there are a lot of concerns coming out of the M&A space today around the use of AI, and especially as it concerns to intellectual property, analyzing of systems. So, you know, if you have software that's built in-house or that you've paid someone else to build that you consider part of your intellectual property, this is an area to be really sure about where that content is being authored and how it's being authored, to make sure that you don't end up in a strategic transaction where some level of legal, whether it be a copyright concern or plagiarism, come out in kind of the final stages of some diligence. On top of that, there's some pretty big security pitfalls as well. One of the things that we know is happening is that folks are entering sensitive information into ChatGPT specifically. And we don't know at this point where that information goes. And if we don't know where it goes, we shouldn't be okay with it going there. And so as IT and security professionals in the technology space, we have to be pretty aggressive in the way we enforce the protection of our company's data. So, you know, we definitely recommend having acceptable use policies in place. We recommend educating your user base on the risks. And in some cases, we recommend, you know, preventing the access of some of these systems that could potentially be a way that data is exfiltrated from your organization. You know, I do want to point out Copilot, by its design, is meant to live within your organization's data. And so there's an inherent level of protection based on the way Microsoft has configured that. It's also, you know, worth saying again, you know, we don't want to reinvent the wheel here. These implementations and rollouts are expensive. We encourage you to engage with those vendors and make sure that you know what their roadmap looks like. So some of the other pitfalls that we see from a more practical perspective around the use of generative AI is an over-reliance. And, you know, judging by the poll in this group, assuming everyone was honest, we likely don't have that problem in this particular group, but it's possible that you do within your organization already. A lot of early adopters, a lot of folks embracing, you know, the GPT model of working. And it's important that we reinforce for our teams that AI is great at gathering information, organizing it, and presenting it to us in a way that looks good, but it does not have the ability to gauge the nuance within information. A great example of this is, you know, we can't use AI within our employee review process, for example. We have to have people in the loop on how do we evaluate people and individuals on our teams. This can be a really expensive activity, and it's one that data really matters. So if you're thinking about how do I leverage Copilot in my business longer term, how do I gain some of those advantages around reporting and BI, it's really important that you start thinking about data cleanliness and data organization now. Where does my data live? Where do I need it to be? And how do I prepare for the future? And so that's the way we're looking at Corsica's data, is we're saying, where do we need this data to live? How do we need it to be organized so that we can leverage AI long-term within the business to drive more value for us and for all of you, our clients? And then, you know, this is a great example of don't trust, but verify it and then trust the output. So test what you get back. You know, meeting notes, that's in general, there's not a lot at stake if you get a meeting note wrong. When it comes to contracts, it comes to, you know, areas of your business that are much more important. Don't change the processes or don't let your users change the process and rely on AI in cases that are really important for the business. All right, so what are some best practices that we see? The first is you know, we recommend and we have some resources that can help with that. We recommend having an internal policy regarding the use of AI tools. And so Ross on our team and others have put a lot of thought into, you know, what does this AI policy need to look like? I think we've got a link here that you can grab an example copy of that. And then it's training, it's education. Just like any technology initiative or application purchase, even though things like ChatGPT can be used, you know, for free, we need a way to either allow or disallow the use within our organization. If we allow it, we need to provide the framework in which it can be used and have a way of implementing and monitoring that. And then this should be in the boardroom. How we're thinking about AI as a business needs, this is an opportunity for the technology team to take this discussion up into the executive team. We should be talking about AI and what's going on with AI in the world with our key decision makers, with the C-suite. And then if we're using AI as a business, we need to have customer facing transparency on that. I mentioned GDPR and privacy. It's likely some of the legislation that's going to come out, it's going to be around having to share the ways AI is being used within your business. So what are some ways to get started with AI? You know, specifically generative AI, is get educated on what are the basics. Get an account. Peter mentioned this. You know, Copilot is a pretty inexpensive way as an organization to pick a couple of pilot users and get them involved, get them some training, get some practical experience. Explore those features and then start to look at ways that can enhance your workflow. And then a key aspect of this is providing with feedback. So, you know, I share with people on a regular basis that I don't like the email generation features of Copilot. A lot of that is because I haven't taken the time and the effort to train Copilot on what I like and I don't. I find it easier and faster to write my own emails. And I think that's a great example of gaining some ground rules of here's where we expect to use AI. Now, where I might use AI specifically Copilot, is to ask it questions about a client. What are the types of engagements? What are the most recent things that we've interacted on? What, give me some context around the last several meetings. And those are areas that, again, I could go find on my own, but I can gain so much knowledge so fast that having Copilot go through our systems and understand that information and provide a summary is much, much faster. So it's finding those good workflows and those good examples is really an important, next step. So, as IT professionals, we need to be educated on this topic. So if you don't have Copilot now, recommend at least getting it for yourself and your IT teams and some key decision makers, and then start building the content in the library as an organization of what do we want our use and our use cases to be for using these capabilities.
We're not using ChatGPT to actually create this webinar and presentation. No, we are real, just for everyone out there.
I'm sure that'll become more obvious as we
Very true. Very awesome. True.